There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 702, April 24th, 2016. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. A happy mihao from Nico and a growling cat meow from Sebastian. The Chinese Red Party is in session now. Back to you, Chairman Mao Zedong.
On today's program, is Nico machismo? No points for Haas F1. Kvyat is really going to piss Vettel off in Russia. Now available on WROCK is F1 Weekly, streaming on WLOR.net Wednesdays at 11 p.m., and Saturdays at 3 p.m. And please stay tuned for Motorsports Mondial with the King. And we'll have 50 words on the Chinese Grand Prix from the F1 Weekly Forum. Nasser, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm doing very good, sir. And not to get too political, but a Russian fighting a German over space in Russia, I think we have history there.
Exactly. But they might send in Trump, the deal maker.
Oh, so he'll build a wall around Sochi also?
Exactly. He's into the wall making business, and that's the way it is. But this is not a political broadcast. This is a motorsports podcast, Nasser.
Let's get back on the track, sir.
Let's get back on the track because we like to go racing.
What do we like?
We like racing. Boogity, boogity, boogity.
Very true.
So anyway, I want to just congratulate all the minds at the FIA for bringing qualifying back to normal.
Yeah, I think it was much needed, and it's a good system, the format we have. But, you know, I'll tell you something. They are talking about doing something for next year. You know, in Macau, they do a qualifying. Then how you qualify, you race in what they call a qualifying race, which is a sprint race, and that determines the grid for the main race. They do that in other series also. I think this could work very well for Formula One, have a 30-minute sprint race on Saturday, and then the main show on Sunday.
I think that's a good idea. I mean, as long as Fernando is winning, that's all we want, Nasser.
Yes, but Clark, a day will come and he will retire. What are you going to do then? Whose song will you be singing then? Kevin Magnussen?
Yes, Kevin Magnussen at Renault.
Yes.
Boy, and Renault didn't look too exciting this last weekend in China. Very disappointing. I teared up a lot.
So sad to hear that, sir.
I know, but I have the picture of Flavio Briatore on my desk, so that helps me cope.
I hope it's not in a Mankini.
No, Mankinis are off limits.
Okay, good.
So, but I was just happy to see qualifying back to normal, and certainly the Chinese Grand Prix was exciting for some of us, but in the end, you have to admit, the penalty on Hamilton was pretty fun.
Yeah, but you know, him not being a factor four, it was no surprise to see his teammate Nico Rosberg on pole. After all, it was here he took his first pole and race win.
Absolutely. No, but it must have been even happier for Nico to know that Hamilton had to have a gearbox changed with everything else. And I have to admit, for a while there, the Red Bulls were looking very, very, very competitive. It was a little deceiving, but still, what can you do? I enjoyed watching the Chinese qualifying and the race itself. It was fun.
Well, I was expecting at least one red scare on the front row, but the smiling assassin, that is Daniel Ricciardo, was a big and pleasant surprise on front row. And so was Kimi ahead of his teammate on row two. But, you know, going back to the Nico situation, that he must have been happy. Obviously, you still have to do the job. And he's done a great job. But I have to say this, with all the reliability we have these days, especially with the Mercedes Package, if he can eke out a 50-point lead over LCH, then it will be very hard to beat him in the championship. You know, even if Lewis, I'm sure there will be a phase in this season where Lewis is going to go 3 or 4 or 5 wins in a row. But if Nico is finishing second all the time, which won't be too hard given the package they have, it can be a very exciting, but it's still a long season to go, and we'll see how it works out in Abu Dhabi.
Yes, no, it's a long season, but I agree, but I'm still sort of in 2015, and look how quickly that season went by. Boom! So, no, I'm happy for Nico. Not only that, but that's a record-shattering, you know, 6 wins in a row is I mean, I could be jumping the gun here, but it's huge. And he's been very consistent. He seems to have settled down, and it's Lewis Hamilton that seems to be all over the place. And I know he's getting the bad luck now, and we've seen that happen.
Yeah, and you know, talking of his 6 wins in a row, that very select company, something even his teammate cannot claim. Before him, only 3 drivers had won 6 races in a row. Alberto Ascari in the 50s, then Michael Schumacher, and our favorite Vettel, Sebastian Vettel. So, but on the flip side of the coin, he is now also the leader of the group with the most wins without a title, and this win was 17th win for him. So we'll see how it works out.
Absolutely, absolutely. But no, I thought qualifying was very typical. I mean, if we didn't have the penalty on Hamilton, it's possible that he would have been right there on the front row instead of Daniel Ricciardo. Interesting. Even Daniel Kvyat, you know, in 6th was exciting for both Red Bulls being in the top 10. I don't know what's going on with Felipe Massa. Couldn't get into the top 10, while Valtteri Bottas does, unfortunately. But, you know, you have to think about the McLarens, too. I think they've come a long way qualifying 12th and 13th.
Yeah, considering where they were last year, it's certainly a big improvement, but they still have, you know, mileage to cover. But going back to the top 10 qualifying, you know, like you say, young whippersnappers, Carlito Sainz and Max Verstappen, as the name is actually pronounced, they were in the top 10. And, you know, Carlos Sainz Jr. Is really not getting all the hype in media that Max is getting, or Max, as we call him here. But he has done a very good job if you take his performance this year and last year into consideration.
Absolutely. The problem with Sainz Jr., he's too polite. You know, he doesn't cause the sensations that a Daniel Kvyat or a Max Verstappen does when they get pissed off. You hear him on the radio whining and crying. And no, Carlos Sainz Jr., he does his talking on the track.
Yeah, you know, Carlos Sainz Jr., I've met him and interviewed him a few times, and also his papito. Father is also very polite and very nice to deal with. And I think these kids have gone after their parents.
That's true.
I'm not saying that Yoss is rude or anything like that. He's been very good to us when we have spoken to him over the course of many years. I remember, Clark, I was thinking the other day, I think it was in 2006, I went to a karting championship in Marienburg, Belgium, and Max was there and Yoss was there, and Max was so young, I did not even take the time to look at him. But look where he is now.
Yeah, unbelievable. Very, very, very impressive. And of course, like I said, the Renaults didn't do too well. But Haas F1 struggled in China a little bit.
Yes, you know, they're not going to have an easy way in each and every race. No team does. Look what happened to Mercedes. I think it was in Singapore last year, right, where they were totally off the wall.
Right, right. But I remember when Haas F1 said we're going to probably get points in every Grand Prix, I knew that was a mistake. I knew there would be bad days because I'm a professional NASCAR.
Yes, and what would an amateur like Gunther Steiner know?
Exactly, nothing from nothing. But it's interesting, Gunther now is asking for more testing for new teams, which he should have negotiated, obviously, before the season started.
Well, I heard that FIA has agreed for more in-season testing for Pirelli tires. So hopefully they will spread the love around and not. From the secret test session they once did with Mercedes?
Yes.
Yeah, so.
I Well, I'm for all, testing on all levels for everybody. So.
No, absolutely, they should have more testing, and you know, this would be a good way to give a seat time to a young. They should really, you know, like I've said this many times, like the NFL. You know, if you're dead last in the championship, you get the first pick in the draft. And they should do something like that, where whether it's testing or maybe FIA should pay for one season of this guy who won the GP2 championship and pay the team that finished dead last, or allow 3-4 days of testing to the GP2 winner at no cost to him. You know, the thing is, everything is so big business these days. I was talking to a gentleman a few days ago over the phone who's been involved in motor racing for 40 plus years. And I asked him, because I had a, you know, you see all these drivers who get, join a driver development program for this team, that team. And he said, you know, a lot of these are, they have to bring a lot of money to become a test driver. And you know how much testing you get. A lot of it in the simulator, but not on the track itself. So it's, they need to address these issues in racing.
I agree. I agree completely. And the biggest problem is we could be missing out on some great talent.
Absolutely.
that happens to live in the ghetto.
Yeah.
So, no, that's bad. Now, what do you think about Lewis Hamilton's decision to start not from the pit lane, but at the end of the field?
Well, I'm glad you asked. And who can answer this question better than what's the name of this guy? Paddy Lowe, executive director of Mercedes. And this is what he was quoted as saying. One of the debates we actually had overnight was whether to do a bit more work to the car and start him from the pit lane, which ironically would have been a better decision in hindsight, given what happened at the first corner. End of quote. Now, my two Chinese yuans will be, it will always be a good idea to start LCH from the pit lane if he's not on the front row. That's what my response to your question is, Senor. What do you think?
Yes, no, I completely agree, because it was, when you have to pass so many cars, and LCH is a great driver, but I think he would have had a better shot at getting on the podium if he had started from pit lane.
No, you know, if you look at him, if he's not on the front row, or even if he drops from the front row at the start, he is wheel banging with somebody. I mean, you know, and you know, it was a very lucky thing for him that he was able to continue and salvage some points, because if Nico is winning, he has to finish second or third. Otherwise, party will be over by the time they get to Silverstone.
It's called a runaway.
Yes.
So, very interesting, but I did enjoy Nico all by himself on the front row. I dig it. And, of course, Daniel Ricciardo. I mean, Christian Horner must have been thrilled to death to see their turnaround with Red Bull back on the front row.
Yeah, well, you have done what he and Dr. Marco are also doing. I don't hear the word Renault from or a Merci Renault from Dr. Marco or Christian Horner. Kind of surprising now.
It's very, very kind of surprising, but it's typical. We know how this all works. And Kimi Raikkonen out qualifying Sebastian Vettel was very fun to watch as well. Kimi obviously doing a lot of espresso shots on the sidelines, or maybe Kimi is drinking Red Bull.
You never know.
Yeah,
That was a good surprise. You know, I think that if this is just my opinion, but then again, it happened at Ferrari. Do you think if Kimi and Sebastian Vettel were driving the Mercedes car, I'm sure both of them were going to race, but do you think even in that very competitive package, he can push Sebastian Vettel on a regular basis?
Not on a regular basis, because he's too sleepy.
Yeah, well, it's known from his karting days that he likes to sleep before a race. But then again, that could be his way of staying up. This guy really, apart from, he has said it himself, he loves Formula One, but not the bullshit that goes on with it. And there is quite a bit of, you know, this really reminds me of what Alex Zanardi wrote in his book, you know, that when he first made it to Formula One, his words were he was surprised how many useless people are on the grid shortly before the start of the race.
That's very funny.
And why would Kimi want to? A guy who doesn't want to deal with anybody, why would he want to waste his time with people?
Kimi is not a people person.
No. No, he's not.
And I of course, I have to remind you that Fernando did out-qualify Jenson Button.
Wow. So he is off the beach chair now?
Yes, he's back in town, off the beach chair. Well, you know, he started reading Kimi's book.
And what is that book, How to Win a Championship and Then Forget Racing?
Exactly. So it's very interesting. I don't know how long Fernando's going to stay at McLaren Honda because they're going to be mid-pack for a couple of years. No, this Honda magic, you know, that they were hoping for takes years now because of the lack of testing and development within the rules. I mean, don't forget, you know, in the 90s, testing was unlimited.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, they started so far behind that even after catching 3 or 4 seconds, they are just on par with the top teams.
Right, because obviously right behind the McLaren Honda is Romain Grosjean in 14th and the Haas Ferrari. So, I mean, if a new team like Haas is already right there neck and neck with McLaren, I mean, we're talking about a huge company here.
Oh, yeah.
So I find it absolutely unbelievable. Unbelievable. It brings tears to my eyes to see Fernando suffering like this every day. You know, it's very possible that Fernando could throw in the towel and retire and go back to Oviedo.
You know, I would hate to see this, but just like Kimi is not going to get a second championship, I don't think Fernando is going to get a third championship.
No, it's not going to happen. Not in this day and age.
And, you know, most probably his teammate in 2017 will be this young kid, Stoffel Vandoorne. And talking of him, this past Sunday, which would be April 24th, he was second. He was on the podium third, I believe, in his very first race in Super Formula, which is the Japanese top-level open-wheel series at Suzuka. And those cars are very powerful, you know. They're not like Formula Atlantic, very powerful machines. So we have a Nando to partner a Nando next year, I think.
Which is good. I mean, I'm even ready to move on myself. Instead of watching Fernando suffer, maybe I should just find a new young whippersnapper.
Yes, and you know, maybe you can start following some other series. How about Hapedos?
Hapedos or NASCAR, or, you know, who knows what's going on. Maybe I'll start watching Tour de France. It's only once a year. I could just do one podcast a year.
Yeah.
Could you imagine?
GP2 will be good for you. Every win is a Renault win.
That's true. That's very, very true. And there's always Formula E, but I don't know. I'm scared. Maybe I'll watch the Clio Cup.
The Renault Clio Cup?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do they still do that?
Yeah, in some countries, yeah. There's all sorts of racing everywhere.
Exactly. So anyway, let's go to the Grand Prix. That was an exciting Grand Prix, especially that start where people are hitting each other, laughing at each other, and Kvyat is Mr. Russian Machismo.
Yeah, the race was very, very exciting. I mean, a lot of battles up and down, and I really, really enjoyed this. It was pretty obvious who was going to win the race. But still, it was a very exciting thing to watch.
Yes, absolutely. Especially Sebastian Vettel hitting Kimi Raikkonen while Kvyat saw an opening and went for it. I think I think Kvyat did the right thing. Sometimes you got to shake it up, especially when you're young. And Red Bull want to see Kvyat be a little more machismo.
No, yeah, of course. And, you know, Sebastian Vettel, like any great driver, they think they are never wrong. And some of us remember his Sepang shenanigans, also known as Multi-2-1 debacle. And also some years ago, there was a Turkish tangle with the same teammate. Do you remember those cases?
Oh, yeah. So exciting.
Yeah, he called Kvyat a madman and suicidal. But it was interesting to see the argument in the... And Nico Rosberg was laughing at it in the, you know, in the green room or whatever they call it before they go to the podium.
Yes, that was exciting, but Nico wasn't laughing at that. He was laughing because Hamilton wasn't on the podium.
Ah, the truth comes out, huh?
Yeah, he was giggling. He was seeing that points haul. He was thinking about his papa handing him the world championship trophy at the end of the year. He was fantasizing.
Yeah. And but Sebastian still did not get much love or any love from his ex-boss, Christian Horner, who said, and I quote, "The Ferraris were getting dizzy with each other, and Kvyat took advantage of it. I couldn't see anything wrong with it," end of quote. Now, I wonder if Christian Horner would have used the same lingo if Bastian was still driving for him. What do you say?
Well, probably not.
Yeah, it's politics. You know, everything depends on what side of the fence you are.
And I know.
And Signor Maurizio Arrivabene, the new Luca di Montezemolo at Ferrari, he was brief in his opinion in the matter, saying, and I quote, "This is racing, it's not monopoly," end of quote.
Very true. And I felt bad for Ferrari president Sergio Marchionne, who made an appearance in the Ferrari paddock that weekend. And to have something like that happen, it is a big bummer.
Yes.
And I really felt bad for Ricciardo. I mean, his start was, you know, sort of wonderful, but boom. When he tagged Rosberg's front wing, Ricciardo suffers a rear puncture on lap three, allowing the Mercedes to pass him. That was brutal. All of a sudden, the Renault love. And they probably, you know, they probably blame Renault for that.
It's amazing how many drivers hit each other. Ricciardo, Kimi, LCH, who knows who. But everybody kept going. It was very impressive.
It was very impressive. But boy, I mean, when Ricciardo took the lead on that first corner, I mean, I was pretty pumped up.
Yeah, but I mean, it was pretty obvious. It's.
I know. But I have to see. But see, now that's how I endure through these Mercedes dominated years. Just those little brief moments of love.
Reminds you of what? Vettel at the Red Bull.
Correct.
Yeah, but so, you know, nothing is forever, and sooner or later, somebody's going to knock Mercedes off the top notch. You know, top spot. It will happen. And just hang in there.
I know. Now, of course, we had a safety car on lap four. And at first, I'm thinking, was this a competition caution? Was this phantom debris?
No, I hope we never have that in Formula One.
I know. But still, I thought the race could have gone on without the safety car.
Well, you know, safety, precaution is better than sorry, I say, especially what has happened in the last few years.
I know. And we would have had more punctures, I believe. But I think I think even in Formula One, the safety car comes out much quicker than in the past.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. And what I don't like is the handing out of penalties for, you know, if you look the wrong way, they'll give you a 5-second penalty. That's where I have a problem.
Right. And the safety car did help the Ferraris gather their wits about them to get back into the fight. And of course, Lewis Hamilton pitted for tires. So in the end, I think we got a better race with the safety car. But for me, I think no safety cars, let the race continue, let people get punctures, let Fernando win.
Yes. And talking of penalties, you know, the other Nico Hülkenberg was given a 5-second time penalty and 2 points on his license. The point thing is another nonsense in Formula One, by the way, for driving too slow in the pit lane. And if I remember, this trend was started by Kimi in his McLaren days.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, no, I thought the Grand Prix was fun, and I watched it a couple times because the first time, you know, I stayed up really late to watch the Chinese Grand Prix, because I fell asleep.
And when you woke up, Nando was leading.
Correct. Exactly. How did you know?
Well, just, you know, I can be machismo in my assessment of things.
Yes, and Fisichella was second.
Oh, Fisico.
Bravo, bravo, bravo.
You know, I have to go to one of these World Endurance Championship races. They race in, you know, in the U.S. also. But I need to get to one of them. Because Fisico is racing there in a Ferrari. I would love to sit down and have a nice, you know, interview with him.
Oh, that would be a wonderful interview. That would be the bonus. That would be the cherry on top of the cake.
Oh, wow. I thought you were going to say cherry on top of the gelato.
Le gelato, bravo, fisico. So, no, very interesting. A lot of front wing damage on Hamilton's car. There was a lot of problems in this race. It was fun. And, of course, to see Haas not get into the points was, I think it was tough on Grosjean more than anybody else.
Yeah, even though the race was in Shanghai, they got a Peking duck from it.
They did get a Peking duck.
Yeah, no points in round three. The American Dream Team had a nightmare of a race in China, and team principal Gunther Steiner. You know, Gunther Steiner, as German as it sounds, interestingly, the guy is Italian.
That's what's so funny.
Yeah, he is calling it a reality check. And I think in Formula One or any racing series, anytime you don't win, it's a reality check. And talking of Mr. Grosjean, he was in the points in the first two races. Remember, he was saying, oh, this is unbelievable. And but he was outside the points in China, finishing 19th, and called his race Kaka. He also lost his front wing in a collision with Sauber of Marcus Ericsson. And his teammate, our amigo from days gone by, Esteban Gutierrez, he was a solid 14th, to use a NASCAR lingo. But it's amazing, Clark, how things turn out in Formula One. Both Esteban and Felipe Nasr won two championships in their first 3 years in European racing. And these were competitive series. And now they are trying to make their mark in the top echelon of motor racing. And of course, we wish them well. And it will be interesting to see what they can do when they have the right package.
Yeah, I agree. Nico Hülkenberg didn't have a great race either. And he's going on his, I believe, in Russia, that will be his 100th Grand Prix start.
Yeah, you know, poor kid was on pole in Brazil some years ago, and he did set the fastest lap in China. And, you know, at one time he was even managed by Willie Weber, the man who brought us Michael Schumacher. And it really goes to show, you know, if everything has to be, you have to be in the right place at the right time. I am convinced you put him in a Mercedes or even Romain Grosjean, and he will be winning races.
I think Nico Hülkenberg may need to talk to other people because statistics show 100 races and no Grand Prix wins is not that big of a deal, ask Jenson Button.
Oh, yeah. Or even Arnaud, he also went quite a few races, if not 100, before he won his first race. It's, once you get to Formula One, you know, it's all about right place at the right time.
It's very, very true. I completely agree.
Yeah, and I'm missing the name. I'm sure you will help me. Even if you ask the world champion from 2005 and 2006, he will say the same thing.
He would just say, machismo, machismo, bravo, bravo, bravo.
Interesting you say machismo only two times.
Exactly. Well, you know, he isn't a Honda. But the other thing is everybody loves people on a Honda.
Yes.
So, and like I said, I was very disappointed with Renault. Kevin Magnussen finishing 17th. And what happened to Joelen Palmer?
He had similar experience as Romain Grosjean. You know, like they say, no matter how much Revlon lipstick you put on, a pig is going to be a pig. So I don't expect much from that chassis. But I think Renault should do well next season with their own design. And, you know, they are going on a hiring binge, you know, getting all the right people as they should. So I expect them to be K-Mag, he should do very well next year.
Yes, it's always next year, isn't it? That's the old saying, there's always next year. But the problem is, ask Fernando, he's running out of years. So, you know, all these people want to win now.
Well, all his tomorrows were yesterday, so that's the problem.
That's my favorite song, Nasser.
Yes.
Yeah, and speaking of pigs and lipsticks, I just got a picture of Sarah Palin right in front of me. I don't know why.
You know, wow, that could be a new song. Lipstick and Pigs and Sarah Palin.
It's a beautiful thing. But in the end, Daniel Kvyat coming in third and being on that podium is a big boost for Red Bull.
No, that's very good. And, you know, lately he has been sort of under the scrutiny because Dr. Mark is already making comments like they want to see, you know, Max Verstappen in a move up.
And they did, and I, you know, is that kind of talk good?
I guess for Red Bull it is.
Yeah, it's fascinating, but in the end, this is a great points haul for Red Bull tag Hoyer secret Renault motor.
No, especially going into the Russian Grand Prix, I think this is a big hype. And who knows, Putin might do some dance, some Russian folk dance on the podium if he's again in the top three.
You know what? If Kvyat can get on that podium in Russia, Putin, I know, will be doing a dance on the podium with him for sure. There's no doubt. I mean, this will be, and I think they're going to sing Back to the U.S., Back to the U.S., Back to the USSR.
Oh, he might do the Lenin Lombada.
The Lenin Lombada is pretty fun, too. I do that on my birthday.
Oh, good. Which is coming up soon, right?
It is coming up soon. You're right. Of course, me and Rubinho share a birthday, Nasser.
Oh, God. No wonder we talk so hear so much about Rubinho.
It's true. I will text him. He will text me.
Yeah, and his father was also born on the same date. Of course, different year.
Of course, and so was Brian Herta.
He's also on the same program as you are?
Yes.
Very good.
It's one big happy family, Nasser. So anyway, I was very happy for the Red Bull Renaults to be third and fourth. Kimi Raikkonen coming in fifth. Good for him. Felipe Massa, sixth, was good. Lewis Hamilton made it to seventh, got some points. But he's seeing this whole season in a strange, weird way. You know, it's almost like a kaleidoscope. Always Nico, Nico, Nico. So this could be Nico's year.
It could be. And it would be very good for motor racing. You know, he speaks several languages. He's not doing what you always say, essay. So he's a good champion for just like Valtteri Bottas. You know, he comes across as a nice guy. But sometimes you need these people to, you know, have a different image of Formula One. And I'm not saying one is better than the other. But, you know, Clark, I will tell you, it's not over.
It's not over, I know. You never know. Honda could find another second and a half, plus Fernando's six-tenths, and they could start winning some races.
You know, there used to be a song called Don't Look So Sad, It's Not Over, one of your favorites, of course. I think Lewis should be singing a song, Don't Look So Happy, It's Not Over.
Yes, no, it's not over. Lewis is going to win some Grand Prix. Not only that, but luck can turn around, and all of a sudden, Nico could be starting from the pit lane.
No, you know, that's what it's all about. You know, if LCH goes two or three wins in a row and one of them sees Nico taken out by Kvyat or, you know, somebody else. But I have to say one thing. If Nico does not win the championship this year and Lewis does, I mean, I don't know what Nico will be doing next season. What face will he bring to Mercedes AMG?
Let me put it this way. If Nico doesn't win this world championship with this lead, this run of wins, it'll affect him mentally, and he will go down in a rubber room in a straitjacket.
Yeah, that's not going to be very good for his psyche, that's for sure.
Even for his neighbors over in Monaco.
Oh, the billionaires living next door are going to console him.
Yes, they won't have that kegger party for him when he comes back with the world championship. Yeah. You know, he'll be devastated. He'll go into hiding in exile.
Yeah, you know, winters are very long and dark in Finlandia. Papa's nationality. You know, Keke was born in Sweden, but of course he's Finnish. So he can go for a long 4 month in Finnish winter, take part in some snow rallies with, you know,
With Alan Prost.
There you go.
Yeah, but no, this is the. If something happens, and Nico doesn't win this world championship, this is going to be an ugly, ugly ending, and it might even help Fernando drive another year.
Yeah, no, I mean, if he wins and Sebastian Vettel is champion, that's another story. But if he does not win and his teammate is world champion, that will be a psychological complete. Meltdown, you know.
Absolutely. And don't forget the rule changes next year. We have rule changes that's going to definitely shake up the grid. And of course, now Toto Wolff is saying, let's not really, we don't need to change the rules, do we? We like dominating all across the nation.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, what I find so amazing is when somebody is dominating and they're saying it's not good for the sport, and you say, okay, 5 years ago you were dominating, winning 8-9 races in a row, you never complained then. So, you know, boys will be boys.
I agree, and I love domination because I know from experience it always ends.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, it really, I don't think it's bad for the sport because people like you and myself and, you know, members of our F1 Weekly familia, I do not recall anybody ever saying, man, he was winning all the races, so I stopped watching Formula One.
Exactly.
It may not be good for casual fans, but, you know, when somebody dominates, then they become part of the news. You know, LCH is on CBS and NBC. You know, what other Formula One driver will get on NBC and ABC unless Danica Patrick is running 18th?
Exactly, exactly, exactly. Anyway, we're up against the clock. We got to take a quick break. And when we come back, of course, we'll have Motorsports Mondial and we'll talk about David Letterman's beard. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Bonjour. Want to stay in a charming accommodation near the historic and famous Cognac and Bordeaux regions of southwestern France? Imagine yourself surrounded by the rolling hills and vineyards of the Charon region, sipping on cognac or the local aperitif Pinot de Charon. Opening in June 2012, Bassinon offers traditional French country lodging in rustic stone cottages, fully equipped with modern comforts, suitable for families, travelers, or groups. Share a home-cooked meal with your host and soak in the ambiance and joie de vivre of the tranquil and rural French countryside. Bassinon is only a 90-minute drive from the Bordeaux airport, or 30 minutes from the nearest train station in Angoulême. Navigate to bassinode.com for information or to book a reservation now. That's bassinaud.com. Allons-y!
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Shall we start talking about points to ponder?
Yes, I know these are great numbers, especially for Mercedes. And I'm glad you're going to bring up who was the race steward.
Oh yes,
at China, because we got these are important little numbers, Nasser.
Yeah, and when you go to China, Russia, you need a tough guy.
Absolutely. So please, points to ponder, Nasser.
Yes, sir. This was race number 400 for Mercedes as an engine supplier. As you know, they had a team in the 50s, and they came after many years of absentia with McLaren, and that became very successful. Just as Mika Hakkinen. The race steward, which changes a lot there, which is good, was 1980 world champion, tough-acting Australian Mr. Alan Jones. You know, Alan Jones was here some years ago at Laguna Seca at the Monterey Historic, and so was John Watson and many other drivers. And the gatekeepers would not allow me to, they would allow me to say hello to them, but no interviews, as I was told, even though we had a media pass. But such is life. Looks like this was race number 287 for JB, Jenson Button. What do you call him, sir, in your French accent?
Jenson Button.
Very good. He came into Formula One in 2000 at the age of 20. I believe he was 20 years old, after beating Bruno Junqueira in a shootout for a seat at Williams. And after a long winless streak, JB was the man in Budapest to win his first Grand Prix in 2006 for Honda. So Honda can win in this century. I am hopeful, Clark.
I think so.
After three races and with two world champions on board, hard to believe the only point scored for McLaren Honda came from Stoffel Vandoorne in his first race in Bahrain, where he made his debut replacing Alonso. Did you have any doubt that Alonso may not start in China also?
I did have a little inkling because Fernando was already mentioning that I'm preparing, but you never know what the FIA will do.
That's very true. The Chinese Grand Prix is only the fifth time since the start of the championship in 1950 that every starter finished the race. And considering how much argy-bargy and wheel banging and let's get physical was going on, it's very, very interesting that everybody finished. 81 podium finish for Bastian, Sebastian Vettel, matching teammate Raikkonen. And Russian Uprising, third in Shanghai, was second in the young and fast life of Daniel Kvyat. He has been based in Italy for a while and comes from the Russian town of Ufa. And you know, looking forward to the land of Lenin and Putin and vodka and Levushka, I am sure LCH is fully aware that after six wins in a row for pretty boy Floyd, he needs to get a flying start in the next few races and turn the tide on his teammate. And as we said earlier, a win for Nico and a DNF for LCH could be a fatal blow to aspirations of fourth championship for the Rappin racer. But as we have seen, things can turn in a Formula One faster than a New York minute. And you know, I just thought about something. If Daniel Kvyat is not on the podium, then Putin will do the Stalin Samba. And you know what happens after the Stalin Samba is played?
Yes.
The concert goers end up in Siberia for a few months after the season.
It's called the Gulag.
Exactly, the Gulag Grand Prix. Now, if you recall, you know how Sebastian got his first championship? I really, really thought it was all wrapped up for Mark Webber till he spun out in the Korean Grand Prix. But if you look at Kimi in 2007 and James Hunt from the past century, and there have been other cases also, all were champions when it was all said and almost done for the championship rivals. And I think Nico is smart enough, and not only smart enough, but he knows what a racer LCH is, that he is not going to celebrate till the checkered flag falls in Abu Dhabi.
Very true.
Okay, so, this is very, very interesting, Clark. This is a real pleasant Shanghai surprise for us. One of my buddies, Mr. Dan Rubel, or as we call him, Professor Dan Rubel, from the days of watching F1 in the 80s and 90s at 5 in the morning in Cali, he was also at the Chinese Grand Prix. Amazing but true, he sent me a text message saying that he ran into an F1 Weekly listener by the name of Aqil. And our sincere thanks to Aqil for being a part of F1 Weekly Familia. And you know, this is the second time that a friend of mine had gone to the Chinese Grand Prix. First time also, same thing happened. He saw some guys, fans, wearing a F1 Weekly t-shirt. He approached them and they said, yeah, we do listen to the Machismo host, Clark Rogers. So we're pretty global, man.
I know. That's why those zeros are just going on forever.
Yes. Let's look at the championship position. Top of the pops, number-wise, is Nico with a perfect score of 75. Lewis second, 39. Daniel Ricciardo third with 6 points. Ahead of both Ferraris, Bastian is fourth on 33 and teammate Kimi fifth on 28. Constructor championship, no surprise here. But, you know, interestingly, after three races, Mercedes at 114 points is at the top with almost double the points of second place Ferrari with 61 points. Red Bull is third with 57 with an engine from a watchmaker, but we all know the real deal is Renault. Williams is fourth on 29, and Haas F1 is fifth with 18 points. You know, if Haas F1 can finish in the top five in the championship at the end of the season, I mean, that would be a tremendous achievement. I think he's going to get a super bonus with some zeros, no question about it. Yeah, and there is a common thread between a team owned by an American or German-owned team and Indian F1 team. All are based in jolly old England. And talking of Indian-owned team, I don't know if you've been reading on this. It's mostly offline as far as actual racing coverage is concerned. An arrest warrant has been issued against Dr. Vijay Mallya in India. And anybody who wants to read more on this, they can go on timesofindia.com or the hindustantimes.com. I guess the Indian authorities want to give him a dose of his own medicine. He is enjoying the good times in Knightsbridge, which is also in England. For the past many years, Dr. Mallya and his companies, they have been on the Carl Sagan program, borrowing billions and billions of rupees. And apparently he did not get the memo about the repayment clause. He owns a house in Sausalito on the Frisco Bay, close to where you are, and has an extensive collection of cars in Northern California. You know what is interesting? He was in India when they were trying to get an arrest warrant issued for him, against him, and before the court could issue. By the time they issued, they found out, oh, 2 weeks ago he departed. He's in England now. So pretty sad story. And the Indian government has also trying to put a sort of a levy on any payment from Diageo because he sold most of the shares in his family-owned business, United Breweries, to Diageo, people who own Johnnie Walker. So it's become quite a financial mess there. But that's the way it goes. Okay, talking of your hero, and before we end the review of the Chinese Grand Prix, we have famous last words. Today they come from the hombre who brought 6 tenths to McLaren first time around, the one and only Fernando Alonso, who said after the race, and I quote, "We need to find that half second that can put us in front," end of quote. Do you think that half second is coming this year?
It is not coming this year, Nasser. Trust me. It depends. I don't know where they stand on tokens, Honda, that is, but they need to start spending them now.
Yeah, this token is another useless thing they have in Formula One, you know.
I know.
They bring back some serious, I'm not saying unlimited testing, but serious testing. You know, what they should do is do some testing at tracks where they don't race like Jerez or Jarama, or even Brands Hatch for that matter, and allow people to come in to watch free of charge. That's how you will get new fans to Formula One.
Absolutely. I'm throwing in Martinsville.
Yeah, but please do not lobby for the paperclip track that is Bristol, Tennessee, not Bristol, Connecticut.
Thank you. Okay.
Now we go to Southern California, Long Beach Grand Prix. Power to Team Penske. One driver, Elio Castro Nordash Neves, wins the pole. And another driver from your fantasy land, from Poitiers in France, Simon Pagenaud, wins his first for the captain since joining his team, IndyCar team, last year. Scott Dixon from New Zealand was second for Chip Ganassi's team. Penske and Ganassi both now have 6 wins each in the Port City, located just a few miles south of City of Angels. And you know what the missing persons from the Golden State say? Nobody walks in L.A. One of your favorites, sir?
It is one of my favorites, Nasser.
It is very nice, not? Okay. WEC World Endurance Championship from Silverstone, which took place on April 17th. Porsche with Romain Dumas, Neil Jani, and Mark Leap was the winning car after the winning Audi was disqualified. Toyota, driven by Mike Conway, Stefan Sarrazin, and our favorite Kamui Kobayashi, was second. You know, I'm surprised that Pastor has not made it to IndyCar, and I think Kamui Kobayashi will do also very well here. But let's see what happens. World Touring Cars, you can find solace in this series. Citroën is doing very well. Are you watching any of this?
I am on YouTube. Citroën is once again kicking the bootay.
Yeah, I'm talking of YouTube. I'm really, really enjoying watching different series and races from the past on YouTube. So it's a good way to get your motor racing fix. Anyway, World Touring Cars, they were in Slovakia Ring, which is in Slovakia, of course, what used to be Czechoslovakia. Thiago Monteiro from Portugal was the winner in race one in his Honda Civic. Second was Mehdi Benani of Morocco, driving for Sebastian Loeb Racing Citroën team. His teammate Tom Chilton, brother of Max Chilton of IndyCar Racing, was ninth. Both brothers are sponsored by a company called DDP, which stands for Daddy's Deep Pocket, and their daddy's pockets are very, very deep. Jose Maria Lopez from Argentina was the winner in race two in a Citroën. Second was Montero, and third was Dutchman Nick Katzberg in a Russian Lada Sport Vesta. And talking of Russian Lada, talking of Portugal, I think Dr. Miguel a few weeks ago put a posting on his, I think it was on his Facebook page, that he wants to take the Trans-Siberian railways and then another rail to China, Mongolia, Thailand. You know what? I think I'm going to sign up for this deal the year I retire, which is not too far away from now. Would you like to partake in this travelogue?
As soon as the air conditioning is installed.
We're planning this trip in winter, so you won't need an air conditioner in Siberia.
Okay, that's very true. Then I'll get my Russian fur hat ordered.
There you go. Okay, some big news from the world of motorcycle racing, MotoGP. Next year, Mr. Jorge Lorenzo is saying sayonara to Yamaha and joining the Ducati team, which is now owned by Audi, which is now owned by Volkswagen. And Lorenzo, man, I remember when he came into MotoGP top level, he was very, very impressive. Started his first race from pole position, was second on his, I think, finished second in the race. And 2010 was his real breakthrough, taking six wins and never finishing a race lower than second. And this incredible consistency has become a trademark of the Mallorcan, taking the title with an incredible 383 points. So, and today, you know, April 24th, there was a Spanish Grand Prix MotoGP sponsored by Red Bull. Valentino Rossi led from start to finish, and it was very interesting. And Mr. Lorenzo was second with Marquez third. So this is going into a pretty good battle between these three riders. And you may ask yourself, where is Rossi's new teammate will be? I think he might be on a Honda these days, but in 2007, I would love to see Marc Marquez at Yamaha with Rossi as teammate. And we know how much cage rattling and frame rattling we will enjoy if that happens.
Very exciting, very true.
And of course, you're never watching any MotoGP races, right?
Of course not. They're missing two wheels.
Yeah, but it's 45 minutes. There is no silly pit stop or random caution. It's a great series. I've always enjoyed it. Anyway, now we play the name game, Mr. Rogers. Over the years, very pleased to say we have interviewed many young racing talents from all over the globe, long before they raced in Formula One, or reached Formula One, I should say. From the late Jules Bianchi to names like Valtteri Bottas and Romain Grosjean, today we have a name we have mentioned before, and I am pretty certain that we will see him in Formula One before Massa and Pedrosa win a world championship, and that name is Lando Norris. Last year we interviewed him at Donington, where he was racing in the MSA Formula Series, which is a new series, a step before Formula Renault. And this year he is racing in the BRDC British Formula 3 Championship and also the very competitive Formula Renault Euro Cup. And they were racing at Aragon in Spain for their opening round of three races. Lando was second in the opening race of the weekend and won the remaining two races. Earlier in the year, he won the Toyota Racing Series in New Zealand. And this is a real deal. And I'm convinced, even at his early stage of his career, that this kid is going to be in Formula One in due course of time. And very, very good talent. And of course, we wish all the good talents all the best. And finally, we come to the Lewis Rukeyser segment called, as the late financial reporter would say, read it and reap it. And this is a story on ESPNF1.com titled Formula One, Who's in Charge of the Runaway Train by Maurice Hamilton. And Maurice Hamilton is a very well-known and very well-respected motor racing journalist like you are. So if anybody's interested, it's a good story. And we thank everybody for listening.
You did not mention Formula E racing in the streets of Paris.
Well,
exciting.
It was in your homeland, your own Shangri-La. I would leave it up to you.
Well,
you need some help. I can tell you who won.
I think it's called Felipe Di Grassi.
Lucas Di Grassi.
I was close. See? That's what happens when you leave Motorsports Mondial to me.
Yes. And Jean-Éric won. You know, this racing series has another of our favorites, Sam Bird. Jean-Éric won and Sam Bird, they are teammates, and they had quite a scrap all through the race. But it's good to see this series. They only race on city center areas or, you know, on street races. So it's getting up there in popularity.
Not only that, but, you know, Alain Prost is a senior team manager for Renault E-Dams, who they did okay in Paris this weekend. But this could be an opportunity for you to run into Alain Prost and say, "What's up, my brother?"
Yeah, that's very much on the agenda. You know, last year, a year or two ago, they did two races in America. One of them was in California, one in Miami. This time it was in Long Beach, a week or two before the Long Beach Grand Prix. It was just not enough time for me to make arrangements. And I am planning a run to Mexico City on Memorial Day weekend to go with our amigo, Senor Eduardo, to the Grand Prix track, Hermanos Rodriguez, and I look forward to meeting him and going there. And then if all the stars align, Clark, I need to talk to my boss about getting some extra days off the vacation, and I want to make a run to England and hang out with F1 Weekly familiar members there. And also, you know, if I get the time I need, one full week of vacation, I'm short by like a couple of days, then I really want to go to, this is my new motivation to go to Austria. The GP3 cars have a test session there, and may I humbly request you to send a request to GP3 media people to ask if I need a media pass to go there. Sometimes, you know, these sessions are closed to anybody, but so if you could do that, I will appreciate. And Giuliano Alesi is racing in this series. He will be there, and I'm very much hoping his papito, the one and only Jean Alesi, is also there, and I can do an interview with him. That'll be great.
Keep up the good work. Now let's quickly go into 50 words on the Chinese Grand Prix from the F1 Weekly Familia. Ye says, what a corker of a race. I think Hammy should start from the back every time. Leon Bray, we now know how to improve the racing. Put the Red Bulls and Ferraris mid-pack or start them top 10 from the pit lane. Kudos to Daniel Kvyat for not letting himself be bullied by a driver in a red car who got caught in the middle, and Ricciardo, who again demonstrates why he is the king of overtaking with some moves that even make Magnussen look tame. Hamilton 22nd to 7th, Ricciardo 18th after a puncture to 4th, Vettel 12th after hitting Kimi to 2nd, Kimi 20th after getting hit to 5th. Neon Zapper, pieces of carbon fiber and shredded tires all over the track. This was an insane race. And Nasser Hamid, the man himself, the guru, says, the race was as delicious and spicy as Mongolian beef at P.F. Chang's. No wonder their fortune cookies on Saturday night were screaming, Hammy, you no finish on podium in Shanghai. Keep up the good work, Nas. There you have it, and there you go. We love everybody on the forum. So, Nasser, any final thoughts before we go to the USSR?
Back in the USSR, I would love to see Lewis Hamilton get a win. Finally. That would be great. And I don't know how much it rains in that part of Russia, but a rain race in the streets might not be a bad idea.
Maybe, but I don't know. But I think if we do have rain and snow, this is Fernando's chance to get some points and win.
Well, I hope it happens that way, so you're happy. You know, obviously, when Fernando wins a race, all the 600 words from the 50 words will belong to you, or should belong to you.
They will indeed. So there you have it, Nasser. I want to thank all the listeners who listen. Good night.
Bye-bye. We'll be right back.
risk is met for his brother, man. Can you dig it? Who's the cat that won't cop out when there's danger all about? Right on. You see, this cat chef is a bad mother.
Shut your mouth.
What I'm talking about, chef?
Yeah, we can dig it.
He's a complicated man, but no one understands him but his woman.